Good afternoon. Welcome to Holden Village. Today is Thursday, August 9th, 2001. In the Creekside room this afternoon is Tom Bracken. Today's session number is BRT 2001-04, and it's titled The Sexual Man, Male Sexuality Solutions. Let's listen in.
Sexual Man, take two. And are there people that weren't here, aren't there, that weren't here on Tuesday? I thought so. My name's Tom Bracken. I'm a family physician that has nothing to do with it. I don't know if family physicians have better sex or worse sex than other people. I'm just here as one of you, somebody that's journeying through life a bit puzzled about his own sexuality. This is being taped. And those tapes are available if you want to buy one and come back, make sure you can listen to it. Or, if something comes up, and this is a perhaps more sensitive subject than some, somebody said something really personal in here, either I would think, well, let's not have it taped, or you can ask me. So if you admit something or say something you don't want to have other people listen to, of course, the only one that's not anonymous is me. But feel free to bring up the fact that we're not going to have it taped. There's hearing aids. Anyone have hearing trouble? Okay. And a couple of goals, just like the last time. My main goal, and I was partially successful, was to get people to read this book, The Sexual Man, by Archibald Hart. Dr. Hart's a conservative theologian. I'm a psychologist and counselor. Wrote this wonderful book after interviewing hundreds and hundreds of mostly religious men and finding out, to his surprise, how many of them were troubled by their own sexuality. Very easy to read, and again, it's available in the bookstore. No, it's not available in the bookstore. It's available in the library. You can borrow my copy. The other book that I'll mention now is by a person who used to be my pastor, married me, then he was a bishop. Now he's in trouble because he approved of this gay ordination in St. Paul. And Herb Chilstrom, who was he a president? He was a bishop. I don't know. Sexual Fulfillment for Single and Married, Straight and Gay, Young and Old. And there's a controversy going on about this book. They feel homosexuality is okay. To put it bluntly, they feel that sex outside of marriage is not okay. And people are arguing with them for both sides, so they're probably right. But this isn't a bookstore. It's a wonderful book. I remember when Lowell did our premarital counseling, got me in trouble. But I remember thinking, this kind of overweight, bald guy having sex. You don't admit these things, but I thought about it at the time. He has a wonderful wife, and he talks about that. He also wrote a book called Be Good to Each Other, which is a great book for people getting married. Very brief, less than a minute or two, review of what we talked about Tuesday for those who weren't here. Sex is a good thing. It's a beautiful thing. And it can really be an ugly thing. And it's so different from a lot of the other things we do. And my pastor and friend Rich Fitzer, when we were done the other day, said, I didn't hear enough about the goodness of male sexuality. We heard about the badness, kind of a feeling like we have to battle this demon inside of us. We never win, and I think there is that aspect to it, but he didn't hear enough about the goodness. So we're born sexual beings in adults, late childhood, early teenage years, and that's a good thing. And if everything went well, we would get married. If everything was easy, we could get married to an opposite gender spouse, that's easier, and have sex every so often and be satisfied with it. It would be a beautiful part of our relationship. Mm-hmm. That's not what always happens. And the badness comes in mostly because of the way we learn about sex and what society has done to our sexuality. It also comes in, I think, because we are both spiritual beings and biological beings. I think the biology gets in the way. Randall's been talking about violence. A little bit of violence is biology. You come up to somebody and put your fist in your face, you'll probably react, at least feel like reacting violently. And sexuality, some of that's violent. And the point he makes in the book that almost all of us suffer some shame, some lack of self-esteem, and we suffer not having as good a sex life as we could have if we talked about it, if we were raised properly, if we avoid getting diverted into paths that are not helpful or not healthy. Any comments about that? Today I'm going to proceed through the book. We got about halfway through last time. And I think I have less than last time, but who knows? We'll find out. By the way, how has sex been for you guys here?
I've only had sex once since I've been here.
I'm happy with the way things are going. This is a tough topic. We don't have the teenagers here today.
We can act like them.
They're not our inner teenagers.
A lot of residue of adolescence to work with here for some of us.
Oh, do you remember the time in those woods back behind the house and you were out there and the other guys were looking at something? I remember this very clearly. And what is that? What do you got there? They had pornography. They had pictures of naked women. Jeez, I hadn't really thought about that. It wasn't as prevalent as it is today, and I didn't see it on television. And to me, it was out in those woods down by the lake. And they were all black and white. And we had one breast in color. Just one breast. That's all we had in color. Boy, there was some confusion.
Now, that's why you became a doctor?
Not completely. Played doctor some, but that's a whole other story.
Pelvic exam.
Well, I tell you, pelvic exams are the exact opposite.
Right. I would guess that puts
it. It's a very unsexual experience for, I would hope, most physicians. Although I tell you, as physicians, you do struggle sometimes with that relationship and how to handle it. But I don't have any problem with, personally, with, oh boy, that was stimulating. Just really good. Pornography, that's a hard thing to define, wasn't it? Just as Douglas said, I know it when I see it. And it was supposed to be, what was the definition? It had to be, what's the definition the Supreme Court used? It had to be uplifting or artistically fulfilling or something in order not to be pornography. They were ridiculous definitions. When he did this survey 10 years ago, he found that these guys were probably coming from more intact homes than your average home now. Average exposure was 13 to 16 years. Average sex education in school was probably around the same time, if not a little later. Average time we talk for kids at home, why that really varies on your home. And if you want to get to them first, you got to start when they're 10 or 11. We talked last time about, wasn't it UJ that talked about the book, what was the name of that book? The Fat Little People Having Sex?
Yeah.
Where did I come from? Fat Little People Having Sex. Great book.
I think you have to start before 10 or 11. I think you have to start at 1 or 2 and just be comfortable all the way through.
Well, you start with, that's what the body parts are, and maybe not being totally, not, letting them see you naked and talking about what their feelings are.
Answer the questions.
Yeah.
Appropriately.
And not force it down.
When my teenagers want to talk to me, I consider that an emergency. Especially my 17-year-old, it never happens. Hardly ever. It's usually 12 at night. Dad, I gotta tell you something. Oh, Jesus.
last thing I want to do is talk to her. A couple of times I've been up late just because, just about have to pry my eyes open, and they claim I fell asleep during one of them. But it's usually before any other sexual experience, usually before any formal instruction at school, and usually before instruction at home. The interesting thing about the fact that it's before experience is something that I'm not an expert on, but state-dependent learning. The example is with alcohol. If you grow up in a culture, this happens on our Indian reservation. When the young men drink, they get drunk and they get violent, mostly. They have a big party, they drink a case of beer, they go beat the heck out of each other. If you grow up in a family where at Thanksgiving you get a glass of wine, and your parents have a glass of wine 2-3 times a week. Now those people get into the same, 5 years later, get into the same level of alcohol in their blood. Those people that grew up with a violent use of alcohol become violent. People that grew up with a happy Thanksgiving atmosphere will become mellow. So if you're learning about sex more from visual exploitative stuff, that's gonna get your software kind of started in that direction. As opposed to, even if you just kind of let kids to their own and let them just go out in the woods and do stuff, that might give them healthier expressions. And actually, the woods are pretty much the high school hall. But
I thought it was woods class. Okay.
It happens there too. But the point is that pornography is available too early and affects how we feel about it. It has affected, I think, how I feel about sexuality.
That's why the television, I think, you know, it introduces it to these little kids before they can read and comprehend. A 3 or 4 year old can see sexual beings on primetime TV, whereas if they had to read about it, at least they would be 12 or 13.
I'm surprised at the number. We'll have people that go out in the ambulance crew and they bring somebody in, they'll say, yeah, they were all up, it's midnight, they were watching porn, and there was 4 year olds. The men he interviewed here, again, these are probably more religious men than I. 60% felt it was destructive, not just bad, that was another category, but destructive in their life. 5% something said it was beneficial. It was instructive.
What about the aspect of eroticism versus pornography? Or do you put some eroticism into the pornography realm?
Yeah, there's, remember that scene, it was a movie where Demi Moore and the pottery wheel?
Ghost,
yeah, I mean, that was very erotic what she was doing with that pottery wheel. There was no nudity there. Some of the most erotic things don't have nudity. And some nudity in movies or whatever is beautiful, even when there's a, you know, a woman that could have been portrayed, you know, in a pornographic way. And that's not an easy bother. Anybody else have any thoughts on that?
Well, when you consider the woman, the body that God made, I mean, we should find it attractive. Yeah. It should be pretty.
Look at all the Impressionist paintings, Renoir, and those guys, and they're beautiful pictures. We guys get it mixed up pretty quick.
Yeah, who's the guy that does the Polynesian women?
Gauguin.
Gauguin?
This is partly the book. 19th century, this is availability. There was drawing and etchings, and there's drawings going 3,000 years back. 20th century, we started getting some photographs. Like I said last time, I think a watershed here was 1953 when Hugh Hefner published Playboy. And first issue, there's Marilyn Monroe, somebody that's already people have been kind of lusting after. There she is naked. Everybody's seen those pictures probably. 70s, you go to a motel. Oh no, you go to the movies, now you see nudity. I remember when that first came out. 60s, that wasn't true. You didn't go to the movies and you didn't see nudity in movies, hardly at all. 1980s, you go to your motel room and there's some pretty graphic pornography available. and it's openly displayed in stores. I remember going to the grocery store across, we lived across the street. There was, it wasn't just sex, it was variations and fetishes of sex. And here's my 5-year-old with me, what's that now? And in the 90s or so, you got really graphic pornography available on the home cable. And the best, if you're looking for porn, isn't it wonderful to have the internet? And I have an acquaintance whose spouse is totally hooked on this. He stays up all night. You've got pictures, which don't cost anything. You've got chat rooms where you can have, what's the opposite of good sex? Talking dirty with someone you don't even know if they're a woman at a distance. Every kind of fetish, every kind of violence, it's all there. I was reading something about child pornography, and they said it had almost gone away, almost had it beat until the internet came out. Because now they can do this stuff, I think Germany is the source. And you don't have to be there, you just have to find the website. And they're changing the sites all the time so that people can't catch them. The latest thing they want to do is they can make these, I don't know if you've seen the movie Shrek, great movie. Take your kids to it. But they can make people that look like people that never existed, just with animation. And is it going to be a crime? It probably will be. But is it really, is it a victimless crime if they make animated child porn? Who's the victim? And will they get away with
it? There's some court stuff going on right now where a pedophile on release wrote in his journal, his PO read it and wants to prosecute him for what he's thinking and writing in his journal.
I think he was convicted.
Was he convicted of that?
I think he was convicted.
Because I was kind of half following it.
I know, because part of what the story talked about was how the jury reacted, because it was very, I mean, he was having sex and murdering kids in his fantasy life.
Yeah.
He wrote it down, and the jury heard this stuff and said, we can't hear anymore. We can't read any more of this to us. And he was convicted. I mean, I have, my feelings are, that's terrible to be convicted of all that. I think these guys
are, there's thoughts.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
the
these
thought
guys
police.
Are just
here they
tortured.
Are.
Yeah. Mm. So that's the availability, which means you cannot get away from it.
I was going to say a really good book to kind of to show that kind of mid to late 70s transition as far as pornography and the whole history of Playboy is that book by Gay Talese called Thy Neighbor's Wife.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it's like a 5 to 7 year thing where he just went out and indulged and wrote and went to, what's the place in Southern California? Did a lot of that. No, it was like a big, Big Sur, and it was at that time when they were doing a lot of experimenting, and that book is, I think it's still in print, and it's really interesting because he's an excellent writer, so if you want to learn a whole about the whole Playboy history.
I forget what his marital status was, but he really,
it wasn't much,
it was not an objective look at it, it was diving into it.
Yeah, that's really,
I've read a little bit of it, and it's almost pornographic to read, although there is, you can just see what happens to people as you read it.
Mm-hmm.
Any other thoughts?
I'm curious what the state in other countries are. I remember in 1970 being in Europe and seeing things there you'd never see here, which you see here now. And
well, I think there's not much openly in Saudi Arabia or Afghanistan.
Actually, this is Scandinavia.
Yeah, I think Denmark and those places, it's much more, and they have legalized prostitution, and you can walk down the Reeperbahn, and I don't know if women are naked or not, but they're right there. You can kind of pick the one you want. Pick the one you want.
Talk of the Nation did a show on pornography one time, and I was in just one thing out of that. They interviewed a woman who was a producer of pornographic movies. You know, she was just a very sane, you know, obviously a person who wasn't taking images. doing business. And but they also talked about, which I realize now, that you know, you can go to the motel chains in the country and start to put cable television. So many motels you check into now, you're pulling right there.
And the hockey poles running movies.
And, there's a website, in fact, it's on the handout. I don't know if you brought that back. For online sex addiction, and there's a message board there, and it talks, guys and women, mostly guys, just talk about their experiences, and people write them back. Here's an idea, here's some support. And one of several of them said, well, I'm going on a trip, pray for me because I'm going to have to make it. And it's so hard for me not to push that button.
Another thing is, in the city of Portland, Oregon, there is a film festival and event every year at Cinema 21, which is feminist sex workers produce films, documentaries, all kinds of, just a whole varied view, and it's a benefit for the sex workers of the community, because in Portland, I've never lived in a city where there is so much sex business going on. And I'm like going, this is, you know, you can go from the Acropolis to, you know, this place to the Dolphin, and they're all within, I mean, you could just drive around the, in the suburbs too. You know, it's not right in the heart of the city. It's all around. And then it's moving further out. You know, like there's a Mr. Peeps out in the burbs.
One of the points here is that I think it's everywhere, except maybe here. It's pretty hard to find pornography here unless, I don't know, like, it just isn't very much here.
And is that good? I mean, I would, it would be neat.
The little fat people?
Yeah.
Little fat people having sex?
I mean, or like you said, the married couples that, you know, they show at LSS or whatever.
Well, that's not necessarily pornography, though. That's sex. There's
okay. Yeah, because I know, I think I told you I had one class where, I mean, the teachers were real advocates for the XXX movie theaters. They said, if that leaves our country, it'll be even much worse here. You know, you've got to have that alpha.
Yeah, I think one of the things is if deviancy goes underground, look out. It's just like the kiddie porn.
Mm-hmm. Some thoughts about what pornography teaches. Look, some of this is my thought, some of it is his. One thing I think it teaches is that sex is visual. And everyone in this country, a lot of people, we are conditioned think that who we want to have sex with is someone that's attractive. There's some biology there too. It goes back to Scott Peck's work the other day that the romantic attraction is biological. It's almost an illusion. But
say that again. What did you say that's an illusion?
Biologically, romantic illusion of falling in love. Falling in love is almost an illusion.
Uh-huh.
It's not the same as being in love and having a long-term relationship. And if kids learned about sex, young people learned about sex by somewhere where they didn't have any access to visual pornography, and they went to dances and touched and kissed and learned it naturally. Maybe if they didn't even have any limitations on partners, you know, on commitment, even so, would sex be better? I think in a way that part would be better. What I'm saying is that they would learn by touching, and that sex is better with someone that is reacting to you rather than someone that just looks good. Which is really lucky that I got anybody at all. Think about it. But those of us that, I mean, I'm not terribly unattractive, but some of us are really ugly. Think of those poor people. I think of a woman in our town that is the nicest person, and she looks exactly like her parents. She is very overweight. She is just cursed with being unattractive, and she does not, to my knowledge, have sexual preferences. So, pornography implies that physical attractiveness is the most important contributor to satisfactory sex. And of course, you all know this. Attractive women have large breasts, they're perfect weight, and perfect skin. There is never any, in the pornographic magazines, the standard penthouse Playboy albums. They're all airbrushed. The women don't have any blemishes or pimples or flab or anything. Which makes it hard if the guys actually go look for mates. So sex is visual. The next thing. Numerous women are available for sex. And an active sex life will include many different women. As opposed to these people here. It says, and to you, Rebecca, promise to make love only to Richard, month after month, year after year, and decade after decade, until one of you is dead. Sex is for young people. Jay talked about that his movie the other day had some old people with some flab and gray hair. Have you ever seen a movie where older people have sex? I remember one of the
grumpier old men kind of got on that.
No, grumpy old men was good, except, and that was from shot in my state, in Wausau, Minnesota. But it was good, except he had these old guys getting these gorgeous babes.
But they weren't that young of gorgeous babes.
Oh, they're 20 years younger than them, aren't they? And was it Ann Margaret, who was the other one?
Ann Margaret, she's something. Sophia Lorenz.
Gotta be. Those guys were in the late 70s. One looks just like my dad. Walter Matthau looks just like my dad. And there's a couple other things I want to point out to you about that movie. For those of you who are not from Minnesota, we do not ice fish and put our fish on stringers. We put them in a bucket. And we do not bring phonographs onto the lake. And if you did catch a fish, when those guys were getting after each other, the guy put the other guy's car to smell off his car. It does not smell off a car, man. So you can leave it in there for 3 months. It stays gross.
But you have to turn the car on and turn the heat up.
It has to be.
Yeah, it's still safer. It doesn't hold that warm. But yeah, that's a good example. Any others? I mean, it takes a while to think of one.
Well, in most movies, I mean, you look at like Jack Nicholson and Clint Eastwood and all these guys, they're all what, at least close to 60?
Yeah.
Or older? Especially Jack Nicholson, he gets hooked up with a hot babe.
Yeah.
Every single movie.
Yeah.
That's the only thing my wife was complaining about, was like Helen Hunt and Jack Nicholson. Helen Hunt's not spring chicken, but she's a lot younger than he is.
Yeah.
Or every Clint Eastwood's got him, movie's got him with a young gal, but how many times do you see like a 70-year-old woman with a, you know, 25-year-old guy? Unless it's like Harold Maude.
Harold and
Maude.
Yeah. Sex is linked to power and violence. That kind of depends on how kinky of a thing you're getting to. But I've not seen it, but as I understand it, the Playboy that was published overseas has a lot more violent images with the magazines and what we see here. And if you watch Cinemax or HBO or Showtime, I was in a motel and turned on something, and the first scene was a beautiful naked woman with her mouth strapped shut and being beaten, and the next scene was, or shortly after that, she was naked on the floor dead. And there was a scene later in the movie where this beautiful woman's naked with a guy, and she hurts off and she just whops off and hits him. And that stuff is what our teenage sons are watching, and daughters, if you have that in your house.
That's the part of the same epidemic of violence. I will keep them all.
It's not redemptive though, is it?
It's the myth of redemptive violence that keeps women in their place. I mean, there's a lot of mythology that's inside all of us about that. And I think it's a large conversion to, you know, to let, first of all, just become aware of it, which you're helping us to do here, but to let go of it.
Here's something that you said during the other one was, if you were interrupted.
Right.
You know.
I felt violent.
Yeah, it's kind of like, huh? And
Did you have, does that not resonate with you, John, at all?
It has in the past. However, I am a very distractible person. it's really funny. It's like,
anybody got any problem with that?
You know, and the power thing is that it, I don't know if it was very appropriate or not for my mother to kind of explain certain things that were going on between her and my father. And I think at one point she said something to me like, well, you know, your dad uses sex for control or something like that. And I'm like, huh?
How old does
that
you?
Mean? I don't know.
But
10,
that
12,
before you,
13?
Yeah, that's yeah. I think that's too young for a person
yeah.
to understand.
Yeah, it was a little too
I
far out there. And it was like, well, and I know that I have linked power to sex. I wouldn't really, for myself personally, violence hasn't really come into sex for me other than the voyeuristic pornographic kind of the slime that gets on you about that.
The other point is that, and we talked about this on Tuesday, women in pornography are often depicted more as objects or possessions, pets, playmates, bunnies, than people. Now the women are called playmates and the guys are called playboys, and playboys are powerful. The other word for playboy is a rich, powerful person. Playmate is someone that's a child and not in control. He talks about a young man who got into trouble with sexual addiction and would cut out the pictures of women, and they had a collection like baseball cards. I don't recall ever doing that, but here, I'll trade you this one for that one, and I own these. And he really got a feeling of ownership after a while.
You know what's another funny thing is, in just standard, what they call, advertising shooting stuff, they'll just do torso shots. So it's a faceless body.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, just take all the personality away.
Yeah, it's like.
When you get on the bunny thing, I remember 1959, my roommate and I went to a, he had a card to a Playboy club in Chicago. And we stayed until 6 in the morning and then had breakfast. And they had good jazz and stuff. But anyway, these gals were running around.
Well, we like the stories in Playboy, too. That's why we read.
Anyway, they had these little, you know, bunny suits on with these little funny things. You know, his comment when we got home, he says, Carl, they're perfect. You know, they were. You know,
friend of mine
so
just
it wasn't
to
just
a,
in a magazine. You know,
a friend of mine went to a strip joint in Minneapolis and came back telling me how great all the breasts were. Of course, now they're not real anymore. Everybody's surgery
in
silicone.
I was in a strip club in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and there was a woman that was, I would say, I don't know if she had palsy or what, but she was not your perfect human being performing. Yeah. And I was astonished. It was like, wait a minute, this is not the French Canadian girls from across the river.
We'll talk a bit about sexual addiction, which may be difficult for some people. And not every man that struggles with his sexual feelings is a sexual addict. I had a friend of mine that just about lost his life over this. He almost lost his marriage. We're all kind of physically dependent. I'm physically dependent on caffeine. If I quit 3 days from now, I'm going to have a bad headache. I'm not physically dependent on alcohol, but we all know how long it's been since we had sex. You could all tell me how many days it's been. And we kind of have symptoms of withdrawal, but that doesn't mean we're addicted to it.
Well, that's why the media, you know, plays on us. You know, we see nearly naked women on every billboard for Budweiser or cigarettes or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's not fair, is it? I mean,
no,
we're allowing somebody to say, you know, dangle a pizza in front of you when you're hungry.
I always do this during my talks. I think it's supposed to. Lewis is
I bet you
brilliant.
That's a female pilot.
Yeah. C.S. Lewis said that they never, you never see a photograph or a movie of just someone just a beautiful steak, and all the guys are just kind of standing around looking at it. You know, you either have it or you don't. He said the most physically attractive thing to him was the sign Mentor. That's the thing that meant the most to him in life.
How do you spell really?
I think most of us have had some sense of sexual addiction in their life, at least if you use the word unmanageable and you felt like your sex drive was unmanageable. If any of you can remember what it's like to be 19, 15, or whatever. If you at least have thoughts made difficult controlling, at least, however, now I'm in, if you get into full-blown sexual addiction. So sexual addiction is behavior that controls the person rather than the person controlling the behavior. Usually implies using sex to get high. That's a problem. We all do that. I'm going to step back from that. Many of us use something to get high. Music, that can almost be harmful. I can get really high on Beethoven's Ninth or Verdi's Requiem. When I go back and try it again, it doesn't always work. There's no harm in that. Although one time I almost drove off the freeway. Obviously drugs. Even nature. Oh, geez, I hope I feel as good this time going up to Heart Lake as I did last time. Well, you may not. But certainly sex can do that. And some of the types of sexual addiction, repetitive adultery, affairs. And a friend of mine almost lost it, got involved. He's a teacher. My age got involved with an 18-year-old student. You know, there really wasn't very much sex. There was a lot of almost sex and a lot of looking for it and driving around and talking, and just ended up to the point where she was out of it and out of the relationship, and he would drive for hours. He was hopelessly addicted. He looked sick. He was doing things he never would have done. It was awful. Obsessive use of pornography, voyeurism, exhibitionism, obsessive use of the internet. There's, you know, probably a thousand other kinds. One thing that happens with a lot of addictions is if you really get a good high, most of us have had nice alcohol glow, is that it becomes increasingly harder to get it. That's usually not true with healthy things. I really enjoyed salmon the last time I was here. We're going to have it Saturday night, I think. I'll probably enjoy it again. But if you ask an alcoholic, we had a real town drunk in Romania, do you feel good when you drink? Oh, no, I really don't. Did you used to? Yeah, it felt great. Well, why did you do it? I'm not sure. It's sadistic. It's almost like the devil's got a hold of you. It's just torturing you. Well, and they usually get to the point where it's not that pleasurable.
I had a good friend of mine got into the sexual thing by listening to the phone and, you know, the 900 numbers, and I counseled some kids, and I counseled him too to some extent. But he ended up, he had to go through therapy, and he had to drive the cities, which is, you know, 120 miles to go through this thing in a long period of time.
Yeah.
He finally worked it through, and his wife was very supportive of it, but it was just one of those things that
he had some courage. Yep. He had some courage at some point, didn't he, to admit it?
And I really respect him, and even mentioning to me in the first place, but he obviously thought that I was a good friend of his. And
did he ask for help, or did he get caught?
He asked, but he got caught. Yeah. And it was almost like he needed a support in the community, and that's kind of where it was at. And I really respect where he's going and where he's coming, and at least now I can say how things are going. You're getting through this thing pretty well? I mean, yeah, that's okay. I've dealt with a lot of young people, too, that are getting caught in this internet stuff, but they, you know, they're talking big bucks. I mean, $700, $800, phone bill stuff, and it gets to be pretty severe in family structures and to realize of what is really happening here and why.
Where's the point of addiction crossover into criminality? Like either pedophilia or just
according to him, that stuff. Often that can happen because let's say you have some desire and you start, well, I'm just going to get Playboy, and then it's just like marijuana leading to heroin. Does that happen? I'm not sure. But it will often the thrill is not enough. And what was a thrill to initially dabble in some regular porn, then you need some stuff that's a little perverted. And he gave several case histories of people that progressed to voyeurism. That was and other things, prostitution, whatever, things that are illegal, which is really sad.
A lot has to do with your location, position, too, has something. If you're a teacher, I mean, that's something that you just don't want to be dabbling in. I think the university had something happen to a professor because he's dabbling in this stuff. It's a little bit inappropriate.
He talks about the treatment, and it's very much what you were talking about, and it's very similar to AA. If I don't know how familiar you are with 12-step programs, you have to admit you have the problem or get caught. That's the hard part. That takes courage. Now, one thing for us naive people like me, when my friend with the affair and ended up in addiction came to me one morning, he got caught somehow, and he came, Tom, you got to talk to me, 7 in the morning, Saturday. Okay. I went over, he talked to me, he talked to his wife, he's going to go to the priest. I thought, great, well, gosh, isn't it, and I'll tell you this is a real confession, I thought, isn't it wonderful that God put me here to help me talk? It's not about me, Tom. I really learned something there, because what I also learned was that was not the end of it. This is a very strong thing. Men involved in affairs, men involved in addiction, and he needed professional help, and he never really got as much as he should have. But be careful if you get involved, like as you did. Well, in your case, he went on to professionals.
No.
You didn't do it all yourself.
I didn't do anything.
And I didn't do it all myself, but I thought I was doing more than I was, and I did not understand how powerful this was. But luckily, they got through it. Be accountable to someone. Spouse, pastor, counselor, friend. You know, don't be stupid. I mean, alcoholics that just got a treatment should not go right back to the bar. Minimize temptation. Be patient and loving with yourself. If you make a mistake, don't say, well, I fell off the wagon here, I'm going to dive in again. Prayer and trust in God. One thing he makes a big point of, although the recovery process has a lot to do with admitting in your higher power, he believes, and Scott Peck believes, the reason the higher power works is because it's God, not because you have some abstract higher power. Don't think you can just say, I think I'll give this to God, and it'll be okay. I'm giving this to God. He didn't find anybody that worked for him, with that phrase. And support groups. There are 12-step groups. This is more shameful than drinking. I was not an adult back when people weren't almost bragging about their recovery. But it's. I mean, for my position, if I got deep into sexual addiction, how many women are going to want to come see me? Pastors. There's positions you can be in that's very hard, and you have to really have confidentiality. When I have people talk about these things in the office, which you do not very often, I keep them. I don't even put them in the chart in the envelope. I put them in a locked place in the envelope.
I was thinking of Bill Clinton, and you know, admitting the problem and whatever. I mean, hopefully the guy's getting help, but I know that addiction that he claimed, you know, I mean, talk about being on the spotlight.
Did he talk about being addicted?
Yeah.
I never heard that.
I thought it was like his excuse for doing this because it went back so many years.
Yeah. It appears pretty obvious he's a womanizer. But I'm not sure that he's owned up to it.
Yeah, but that bringing it to the spotlight of a public official,
yeah.
I mean, that made a lot of people, and that was tough in the schools. I mean, you got little fourth and fifth graders knowing what's going on the front page of a newspaper, and I mean, they learned a lot of things about oral sex and whatever else that normally wouldn't come up until much later.
I remember hearing that. My kids were, like, 12, and hearing that in the Congress.
But we were educated with the Vietnam War, too, in the front of the media, day after day after day,
yeah.
too. I mean, it's a whole different perspective, too, but it's very similar.
I remember watching Walter Cronkite give the body counts.
Yeah,
And I knew my older neighbors. You know, I didn't know if they were coming home or not. Because I remember when a couple of those guys went off. And it was like, well,
couple of, this is a little bit redundant. This is a little bit redundant. Did you guys get that joke?
Huh? Yes, yes.
Dealing with pornography misuse, maybe you're not addicted, but maybe it's a bad thing in your life. If you have it, get rid of it. Change your habits. I told the story last time about getting rid of the R-rated movie channels. Well, there's, you know.
That's funny that you mentioned R-rated, because that has
changed,
isn't it? PG-13. I mean, you do get it a little harder.
It used to be if you went to an R-rated movie, at least you could see a little sex. And now they're so much more R-rated for violence, I find. I'm amazed how often our talks have intersected this week. I came up here not thinking at all about nonviolence, but they really have intersected.
They are very
It's more often now that they're gunning down 20 people, and you don't get to see anything hardly.
Well, if you look at a movie like Midnight Cowboy.
Jay said it, but a little light just went off for me of, just kind of a new clarity about what men are like biologically, you know, the quicker turn on than women, and the billboards and everything else that's coming at us that is just kind of playing on who we are biologically. You know, I guess it seems so obvious, but, you know, why are we not angry about that? Why are we not protesting, saying, you know, women are saying, quit using our bodies as things, you know, there's this strong movement. Well, why aren't we saying, quit playing with our biological realities, let us be men, you know, quit making bucks off of our testosterone, you know. So,
amen.
Yeah. And
sucking us dry.
You know, what foods do you see advertised? Foods that we all want to eat fat, you know. And,
yeah.
Like the Budweiser's.
Commercials for the lottery, same way.
Oh, gosh, what a weakness. We have a casino, Indian casino, 10 miles from where I live, which has been good for the community. You know, but we've had 3 marriages. In fact, there's someone here.
But I think the sexual thing... I think the sexual thing is in a unique category. I think we've let ourselves, it would look kind of strange if you were a, I mean, who's going to be the first man in my city to stand up and say, I'm tired of the way you're playing on my biological makeup. You know, you get laughed out of town.
But they have gotten rid of some smoking billboards.
Mm-hmm.
It took a while. And I mean, I don't know what it feels like if you're addicted to nicotine to drive by and see somebody smoking. I'm sure a light goes off and says, you need something.
Yeah, but his point is that sex is in a different category, and I agree with that.
Yeah.
What kind of man is really going to stand up and say, I don't want to see women in, you know, scantily clad? I mean, that would seem...
Yeah, you must be gay if you don't want to.
And I am gay, so I can say it, nobody cares. You know,
you don't want to see the guys, you don't want to see the beefcake.
Well, it's more like anybody who says that would be thought of as being in denial. You know, somebody must have been raised in a terribly repressive sort of...
Or you're not normal.
...religious,
yeah.
You know, and they're just sort of repeating that and trying to make themselves think that they don't really like it. Of course, if we were
when you're saying, you're putting it in a separate category, I'm not understanding what you're saying, but how is that different from any other addiction?
How is sex addiction different? Answer I would say is that it's a good thing, and that sex is supposed to be good. I suppose a lot of these things, nicotine really is never good. Kathy's real good. and actually, alcohol in small amounts is fairly good. It doesn't do a lot of good. But sex is, we need that.
How about world population or something?
What?
World population. We got to put our thumb on the growth of the 6 billion and initial pretty people.
By the way, I meant to apologize. I did the other day, in that this has a lot more to do with heterosexuality than homosexuality. There's some carryover. And I'm not an expert on that at all. But
the issues aren't that different.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't find much of this hard to relate to.
Really. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of shame to start with. A healthy homosexual relationship, society already throws some shame at you. Whereas a healthy sexual relationship, maybe not. Beware of the lies about sexuality portrayed by porn. I find Pamela Anderson attractive. She is obviously a very self-centered person. She obviously is fake. The silicone is all over. She has had serial relationships. I'm sure it'd be biologically dangerous to couple with her. But thanks to my upbringing and what's been channeled in my brain, I find her attractive. But I realize what she really is. There's some good to her. She's not all bad. She's supposedly a good mother. You got to get the Inquirer where they have the pictures of what people really look like.
Thanks to your upbringing, though, is that the only reason?
I don't mean upbringing my parents. I mean society.
Yeah, but even that, is there not something innate about male human nature that likes, well, this is going to sound ridiculous coming from a gay man, but likes the fertileness of young females? Usually.
Well, I think that some societies, you look at the Rubens paintings, those women have huge hips, not so much breasts. I think breasts are really emphasized in American society. There was a study or a book about, this was in Newsweek, about why we find certain people attractive and why men are attracted to certain mates. It has to do with their ability to carry a child. And we really should
liking younger women, if not.
Yeah, that's biologic.
Well, I think one of the things is about younger women, or at least for me, is currently with the diseases that are out there, their possibilities of having infection are a lot less. And then also, on the flip side, older women, women 55 and older. And it's kind of like, well, you have a Rubenesque 13-year-old and you have a Rubenesque 60-year-old.
I think the younger women are virologically worse. They have the more abnormal pap smears, I think, because they're more promiscuous lately.
Rubenesque means kind of beautiful in the Hollywood sense. Is that what you mean by that?
No, Rubenesque is very pear-shaped.
Yeah.
Probably 15 to 25 pounds over the Playboy Bunny. You put 25 pounds on a Playboy Bunny, yeah.
How much of this, we are so fickle, and as the media portrays tan Barbie doll type figures to us and our little girls and whatever, I mean, how much did we sway our society into thinking that this is what we need and want? When before, maybe 100 years ago, before porn, let's say, people didn't know what tan bodies looked like.
It's all covered up.
Right, and it was neat to be white. I mean, as white as can be was in Volga 200
years. Just a nice ankle.
Yeah. And corsets and women having ribs removed and all that stuff.
Some of it's healthy and some of it's unhealthy.
I can remember my dad saying one time, in the old days, men used to look at women and use the word sturdy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's sturdy. Now, that'd be like hot now, I guess, but,
She's probably plowing.
Yeah. No, that's what you had to look for.
Maybe by the axe handle or something, I don't know what.
Well, that's what you have to look for, You've got to find, breedable hips, so you don't have to have a doctor present for, no offense, for delivery, so you can live in the bush. And the whole business, you can get work out of them and everything.
Well, men weren't aware of it, but that's what they were looking for. I'm going to go through some stuff quickly because we have about 5 minutes. It talks about sublimating, that's the cold shower. How well did that work? Be accountable, find somebody to help you if you really have a problem. Explore healthy sexuality with your spouse. My co-worker back home, her spouse could not do that. He was so addicted to the internet, he actually was not interested in her anymore.
Hmm.
The other day we talked about, if you're going to talk about sex, don't talk about it while you're having it. Like that movie, Something About Mary, where he encourages, Chris Elliott encourages the guy to masturbate before he goes on the date, because that's the only time men talk rationally. That's the gist of the movie.
So he doesn't go out with a loaded gun.
There was some healthy sexuality in that movie, as there was in American Pie. It's funny where you find it, and it's funny where you don't.
One time at band camp?
What was that?
One time at band camp.
Yeah, you know, well, that gal, they all assumed, because she was an idiot, she couldn't be sexually active. Turns out she was, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? She was very sexually active.
Nympho?
That's it, nympho. And don't expect perfection, because we're not perfect anyway. Couple of thoughts about avoiding infidelity. Take care of your relationships with other women. Now some people, C.S. Lewis was one of them, said you can, adult man cannot have a close relationship with another woman. My wife and I are very close friends with two other people, their daughters with us, and I absolutely love his wife. And we tease about it a little bit. His husband, her husband and my wife don't do the opposite. But I, you know, she's like a sister to me. But I'm careful with how I touch her. I don't hug her a lot. I don't sit with my arm around her. And other people, you've watched your friends and neighbors do this. They start there, it moves on, but pretty soon it's too far, and they've gotten somewhere they really didn't want to be. So you have to be careful.
Well, those affairs can probably be more damaging. Intellectual, emotional versus the physical ones. I mean, people probably can have an affair physically and remain detached.
Interesting thing in that same family is that our two 17-year-olds, boy and girl, are best friends, and they have been since they were babies. And now they're getting to the point where they're looking at other people or just wondering what's going to happen to them. I don't know. But I've seen friends like that be able to move on, have relationships, and still remain best friends. It's sometimes hard on spouses. Realize, this is stupid, you'll find yourself attracted to other women, of course. But realize you also have crushes. I find this happening to me. I'll meet someone and I'm very aware of it. Boy, they seem so attractive. Boy, things would be good with them. Oh, there she is. I'm going to take a look at her. And I said, oh yeah, that's down here. That's biology speaking. That'll go away in a little while. Then I'll realize that she said that? Oh, that's kind of disgusting. And you'll move on from it. Or you may find somebody better than your spouse. I've been lucky in that I have the dissatisfaction of thinking maybe I should have had somebody better many years ago. We've been together since we were in high school. I'm lucky. I can't imagine somebody better for me. I can imagine somebody a lot better for her. I can't imagine anybody better for me.
You must be joking.
No. She understands me.
Well, I'm saying.
If your feelings are difficult to control, share them. Keep in mind the big picture. Gosh, this friend of mine really thought he could just kind of fool around. This guy was talking about the addiction with this younger woman and get away with it. Keep his relationship intact. The young woman thought she would still be friends with his wife. Just realized how dangerous this stuff is and can ruin things long term. Take responsibility for your actions. Don't ruin your life over infidelity. Well, we got through almost all of this, and we've got a minute or two to go. Anybody else have any thoughts? I think I showed this cartoon the other day. This is the goal. Two little guys that say, what's it like to have sexually active parents? Healthy sexuality. And I really hope and pray that maybe we should do that since we have a minute. Let's just bow for a moment of prayer. Lord, thank you so much for this time together. Pray that you would help us as we both enjoy and glorify the sexuality you've given us.
and also help us with the times when it's a struggle for us. Thank you for the fellowship we've enjoyed here. In Jesus' name we pray. Alright, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
If you borrow these books, I'd be glad to lend them to you. I haven't found out if I'm going to be able to talk to your wives and partners or girlfriends or boyfriends or whatever. I might possibly do some of this for them tomorrow. I don't know.